major sighting here.
The pilot encountered this object.
It looked like it had lights on it.
This thing seemed to maneuver in a way that is unlike anything known to man.
I don't show anything on radar.
Oh, right.
Is not an alien force already among us?
Wow, that's a remarkable question.
It's a good question, Jeremy.
I'm starting to really get a little creeped out here.
Searching for the truth.
You want answers!
I want the truth!
Expanding your consciousness.
We're being contacted consciously.
Pondering what could be.
I think this is really a question of what is the reality that we're in.
I mean, am I the only one seeing this? I mean, clearly I can't be off my rocker.
Somewhere between abnormal and paranormal. Into the paranormal.
Welcome back, friends, for the second time this weekend. It is Into the Paranormal. I am Jeremy Scott. It is Sunday night. It is, well, February 24th, 2019, and we welcome in from the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest. Tonight, it's a two-part show. We'll have a guest joining us in this first hour, another one joining us in the second half of the program. As usual, you can find their guest information up at paranormalradio.com, where you can listen live to the program. And if you're interested in becoming a subscriber, well, the information is readily available right there at paranormalradio.com. Tonight, we're going to be talking about the things that make you go hum. Dr. Glenn McPherson to talk about the World Hum Map at the hum.info, which is a project that he has created after hearing about this crazy, crazy hum stuff that's been happening, well, for a while now. Glenn has been tracking this since at least 2012, and it's another one of these mysterious, just anomalies, if you want to call it that. Definitely is unexplained. And he's got some, he's got a ton of information up on his website at The Hum. After first noticing the hum in the spring of 2012, Dr. McPherson sensed the need for a unified, moderated, and serious place for discussions and research surrounding the worldwide hum. He created the World Hum Map and Database Project, which you can find at thehum.info. Dr. McPherson is an ethnographic researcher, high school teacher of physics, mathematics, psychology, general science, and biology. He lives and works on the west coast of British Columbia, Canada. Dr. McPherson, welcome into the paranormal.
Hi there.
It's a privilege to talk about this subject with you because it's certainly something that has been a head scratcher for me for quite some time. The hum. Tell us what it was like for you when you first started hearing about these reports.
Well, I suppose first we should talk about briefly my own experience with it. Maybe just before we talk about the project, back in around spring of 2012, I had been hearing what I thought were some smaller float planes flying overhead. And I noticed after a while, of course, that explanation didn't make any sense because of how regular the sounds were and other factors. So eventually one time I, at around 10:30 at night, I stepped outside and the sound stopped, which I thought was interesting, of course. And so I looked around the house. Maybe I thought there was a fridge malfunctioning or some other source of maybe electric noise or something like that. And I couldn't find anything. Eventually, I turned off the power to the entire house and the sound got louder. So that invited other experiments, such as me getting in my car and where I could hear it, as long as the engine was turned off and the windows were rolled up. And that, of course, invited me to maybe drive around the neighborhood and listen for it. And wherever I drove, I could hear it. And so having exhausted what I thought were the more obvious explanations, I did some searching, a very simple search on the internet, and it discovered that this was fairly widely reported phenomenon. Moved off to the fringes by a lot of ridiculous reporting and that sort of thing. But that's when I became aware of the worldwide hum, and led me to some of the very few serious articles and reports on it. And having again encountered what I thought was a fair amount of really silly pseudoscience and commentary surrounding it, I thought, given that we now were in the internet era, it made sense to then approach this on a much larger scale and to start collecting some more serious data and performing some more rigorous scientific experiments to get to the bottom of whatever this is.
Has this been a reoccurring experience for you? Have you heard the hum more than once or twice?
Oh, well, back in 2012, it was nonstop. However, following the classic pattern, which is that it is louder at night than during the day, and louder indoors than outdoors, and a few other things. The sound is easily masked for a lot of people, including myself, using background ambient noise, such as a bathroom fan or, let's say, a white noise generator, something like that, water feature. And so given where I live now, and because of it's a fairly noisy location, I actually haven't heard it in several months. There's just this ongoing onslaught of noise where I happen to live now. And in that case, it actually masks it for me. Some people are not quite so lucky. Some people are. Some people suffer from this quite badly, actually.
Yeah, I can imagine the health effects and the psychological effects that something like this might have, the long-term exposure to whatever it is this is.
Sound is a classic weapon, in fact, used against prisoners of war, used in military operations, and there's a reason why. If one feels that one cannot escape whatever negative stimulant is in the environment, that can have for some people, a very devastating effect emotionally. And in the case of the worldwide hum, then it's, I think, almost logical that there might be some people who would think that this is some sort of directed attack or some sort of targeted attack. And I think the evidence against that is overwhelming. I think there's absolutely no evidence to suggest that. No disrespect, you know, to the so-called targeted individuals, but I don't think any of their claims hold any water whatsoever. I think that there are some perfectly rational explanation for this, and we've got it whittled down to, let's say, three or four serious contenders for what this actually is.
Yeah, and we'll certainly discuss those. Mm-hmm. So you started hearing about reports around the same time as you experienced yours. What did you find as far as the number of them?
In fact, I didn't start collecting data until I had launched my project later in 2012. Up to that time, I had simply been reading about other reports of it. They certainly weren't sent to me. The first widespread reliable reports of the hum came out of England, probably in the early 1970s, late 1960s, and then in the United States in the 80s. And now that we look at the mapping project, we can see that much of the many people around the globe, much of the English-speaking world is experiencing this. Because of language barriers and technology barriers, we don't have a lot of data from China or India or Russia yet, but we're working on that.
Can you describe what it sounds like? We're going to play a clip later to further demonstrate that, but how best can it be described?
It's a very simple description, which suits most people who hear it. It sounds as if there is a car or truck idling outside one's home is probably the best description. For some people, they describe it as a low-pitched humming noise or as a droning noise. For some people, add other descriptors to it. You, being in the world of radio, know that sound of a guitar or bass speaker that has a ground fault. You know that background mains hum, that 120 hertz mains hum that you get out of some types of malfunctioning transformers or speakers, that sort of low pitch hum that also captures it for some people. So those are all those descriptions are given by different people, but the one about the idling engine noise is probably the one we hear the most, and it certainly sounds like what I hear too.
And so louder at night than it is during the day. Why do you think that is the case?
Well, presumably because the noise of human activity would provide that masking effect. I mean, this is true with any noise. During the daytime, especially because of traffic and simple human activity, the electric grid and everything else, creates a base layer or a base level of noise. And in most cases, that's adequate to block the hum.
And the fact that it is heard louder indoors than it is outdoors would indicate that, to me, it might be originating from within the walls of one's residence. I don't know, but that's certainly a possibility. The fact that it is heard more when you're inside than it is when you're outside.
No, I think we can separate a few things out here. And the short answer is no. I don't agree with that. And there's several reasons why I would say that. First, for those people who hear the hum when they do go into a vehicle, wherever they drive, if they go, especially if they drive up into isolated and quiet areas, the hum could be heard quite loudly. And the instant they open the car door, then it stops. And the fact that some people have suggested that the particular architecture or shape of certain homes can amplify this effect. I think there's quite we have a large amount of evidence now to rule that out. The fact that it's louder indoors is for the same reason that it's louder at night, and that is indoors, the walls and structure of the house mask a good deal of environmental noise, everything from wind to animals to even traffic noise is reduced sufficiently for those who hear the hum to become aware of it.
And so to further expand upon this, an idling vehicle, a kind of a low-pitched noise heard louder indoors than outdoors, appearing to be louder at night than during the day, but yet can be masked by some sort of ambient noise. What would you recommend for folks who are hearing this? Maybe some white noise or some waterfalls or something like that?
Well, unfortunately, the story gets a lot more complex. The reason why is because there are many everyday typical man-made noises or human-made noises that sound somewhat similar to this generic worldwide hum that I'm researching. So, for example, if you live within 5 to 10 miles of a high volume, high speed freeway, for example, a big interstate or a big freeway, then that creates a certain type of hum, as does living anywhere near a large electric grid transformer station, or even some small transformers themselves, or industrial equipment or malfunctioning motors. So what I'm getting at is that before anybody jumps to the conclusion that they are hearing the hum, there's a series of steps that one must go through to rule out other causes. And once we've ruled out all those other causes, then it becomes much more likely that the person is in fact sensing the worldwide hum. On the hum.info, in fact, one of the dominant links there is a link to the paper that one of our resident scientists has written, outlining the process using very basic tools such as a cell phone to track down the source of environmental noises. So I think we have to talk about going through that process first, because then there is a possibility then, of course, that the person who hears an annoying hum of some type then can fix it, that can maybe correct its source somehow. Now, let's go past that and assume that the person is hearing the worldwide hum. Turning on a simple rotary fan or a bathroom fan, I use whenever I need it, a white noise generator. It's kind of ironic, actually, because the traffic noise where I currently live is so loud that I, in fact, occasionally have trouble sleeping. So I've purchased a white noise generator, ironically, not to block out the hum, but to block out traffic noise. And so these white noise and especially pink noise generators, some people have found quite useful for masking the hum at night. And at night is when it's worst.
What about let's maybe get into some of these reports. How many have you tracked on your website, thehum.info, of people reporting exactly what we have started to describe here?
At one point, I had taken the number of reports up to around 17,000. However, once I had that very large base of data, then I revisited the data with a much sharper and much stricter criteria. And just as a minor example, one of the survey questions that I ask is, how much effort have you put into tracking down the source of the noise? Like, for example, you would choose very little, you know, some effort, great effort. So anyone who answered very little effort, then I would not include their data, simply because it's not necessarily valid. It can't be valid unless the person has ruled out certain obvious causes. That's just one example of what I'm talking about by employing much stricter criteria. Now, having done that, we whittled things down to, I think we're over about 7,000. We're between 7,000 to 8,000 points now worldwide. And I suspect the number of people who can hear it is vastly greater. And in fact, I do believe that it's certainly likely for it to be worldwide. Although it does raise the question why this might originate in Britain and then come to the United States. We've developed a couple of possibilities to explain that. But right now, the reports come largely from the English speaking world. And again, we're looking, I think, right now on the map between about 7,000 to 8,000 points.
And over what particular time frame?
Those points? Well, those points come in two varieties. For about a year or so now, we had a young computer program here in this little town where I live who redesigned the search interface at the same time that myself, Bernie Hutchins, and Heinrich were developing what we thought was a superior survey, the 2.0 survey. So there's a mix of points there, but all of our data altogether was from around late 2012, early 2013.
And literally all over the world, was there a particular part of the world that, you know, just didn't really have any reports of this, or was it literally every single corner of the world?
Yeah, well, just, I think the best answer to that is to take a population density map of particularly of North America and then lay on top of that the World Hum Map, and there's a striking correspondence. between population density and the density of hum reports. That is where you find people. You will find people who hear the hum. Now, there are some parts of the world that might be overrepresented. There are some segments of the population that are greatly overrepresented. Like, for example, ambidextrous people are greatly overrepresented in this data. And I have some speculation as to why that might be, but nothing solid yet. But to your question, there's no place in the world that really sharply stands out. No place in the English speaking world that sharply stands out as having greater hum reports than the density of population. Vancouver Island in British Columbia might be an exception. It might be overrepresented in the data, but we're not 100% sure yet.
Well, and we'll continue our conversation with Dr. Glenn McPherson of the World Hum Map and Database Project at thehum.info after this break. I'm Jeremy Scott, and we'll continue on Into the Paranormal right after this.
Connected with us on social media, give us a like and follow at Paranormal Show. Tales of UFOs, aliens, Bigfoot, and earth-shattering science. You're traveling into the paranormal.
Tonight, it's Stories of the Hum, a worldwide phenomenon. More than 17,000 reports, at least since 2012, tracked at Dr. Glenn McPherson's World Hum Map and Database Project at the Hum, hum.info. INFO. Can you imagine dealing with something like this day after day after day and literally having to adjust your life, like, you know, get white noise machines, make sure that you have plenty of ambient noise to kind of drown this out? But even if you're drowning it out, I can imagine that there's going to be some lingering psychological effects that even that exposure might have over the time. And right before the break, Dr. McPherson was talking to us about why certain people seem to hear this more than others. Can you expand upon that a little bit?
Yeah, well, getting to the bottom of that question is obviously part and parcel of solving the mystery as a whole. So far from the data, we are pretty confident now that a good number of the original assumptions regarding people who can hear the hum are not so. We find that roughly 55%, possibly down around 50%, but between 50 to 55% of the people who hear this are male. The age of the average or mean, the mean and median age of people who hear the hum is around 40 to 41 years of age, which incidentally is about the same as it is for the general population as a whole. We do find, though, that people who are ambidextrous are greatly overrepresented in the numbers. By ambidextrous, I'm defining that to be that a person has equal facility with the left hand and the right hand. That is, they are able to shift over quickly to everything from throwing a baseball to handwriting. That is, they have good facility on both sides of their body that way. And so they are overrepresented in the data, which I find really quite interesting. Moreover, recently we started gathering more precise medical data, and it would look as if those people who might have family histories of attention deficit disorder, possibly autistic tendencies, and possibly, and I mean possibly, people who in their family might have somebody with a schizoaffective disorder or schizophrenic type symptoms. And when I mention that, I'm saying that there appears to be a slightly higher incidence of those things happening with people who hear the hum. But for the large part, people who hear the hum are very typical, ordinary people. A lot of very serious, conservative, everyday people. Everything from doctors to scientists to lawyers to most walks of life. Some people do not want to come forward and talk about this. And I can appreciate why. You know, we do have a word in the English language for hearing something that other people don't hear, and that's called a hallucination. Except that, of course, is not valid. And I hope you don't mind playing along again with this ritual. But I would ask you, if I just turn the tables for a second, and ask you, when you hear people complaining about tinnitus, you know, that high-pitched ringing in the ears, when you hear people complaining about it, do you believe them?
I absolutely do, because
if I could just clarify with the second question, sorry, which is, why do you believe them?
Well, because I don't think that that person's going to make something up. I just don't think that, you know, playing a poor, poor, pitiful me, I've got the ringing in my ears all day long, you should feel sorry for me. I don't know how that really benefits someone.
Exactly. And the thing is, though, that even beyond that, we tend to never question anybody who does complain about it. One of the main reasons is because so many of us have heard it from time to time. Up to three quarters of all of us have had maybe a bit of, you know, transient high pitched noises or squealing, that kind of thing. It's just part of our auditory system, the way it works. And but then the question is, if we don't question people who self-report a high frequency noise, why then would we question people who self-report a low frequency noise? I think it's just mainly a case of numbers, and the phenomena only affects perhaps 2 to 3% of the adult population. So we have some people who have, however, written to me. Very emotional, because they had thought for a long time that they were crazy and that they were afraid to tell their loved ones what they were hearing. Now they realize that the phenomenon has been basically normalized. Now many tens of millions of people now have been exposed to the serious reporting of this and the investigation of it through the world media. And not just, you know, through smaller independent, everything from the smallest independent shortwave stations right up to Al Jazeera and major world media now have covered it seriously, which means that it's now more acceptable to come out and state what it is that you hear and that you're one of the people who can hear this. And that in the end is what's going to give us the momentum to have this investigated by a serious laboratory or private lab, that kind of thing.
So you mentioned there are, you know, three, maybe four possibilities of what it is we're actually dealing with here.
Yeah.
Let's get to the leading theory on this.
Sure. The now leading theory, having largely ruled out the first one, the now leading theory is that the worldwide hum is, in fact, an internally generated condition, something like tinnitus, operating quite differently, but in the sense that it's not a noise in the actual sense. In other words, there's a lot of people out there who maybe, you know, think that they've recorded the worldwide hum. I've had no evidence whatsoever that it has been recorded. And I really hope we can come back before the end of the show to have a quick talk about sky trumpets, if we could. But back to your question, I think there's a lot of evidence that the human auditory system is in fact generating this noise. Now, the reason why it is and why perhaps it started in the 1960s and 70s, those we're still exploring. But I think we have some pretty solid evidence to suggest that this is an auditory medical issue.
I want folks to hear part of this news report right here, which is going to do a really good job, I think, in my opinion, of playing the sound at a frequency in a way where we can all hear it. Because remember, as Dr. McPherson has said, only about, you know, maybe 2 to 3, 4% of the population can hear this. So here it is for the rest of us who are not in tune. And if you are sensitive to higher low frequencies, I would just warn you, if you're wearing headphones, you might want to take those out. So here it is.
The American Geophysical Union noted in a press release, citing new research, winds blowing across snow dunes on Antarctica's Ross Ice Shelf caused the massive ice slab's surface to vibrate, producing a near-constant drumroll of seismic tones scientists could potentially use to monitor changes in the ice shelf from afar. Take a listen. Added, the ice shelf song is too low in frequency to be heard by human ears, but it has been made audible by speeding up a 2015 recording of the ice shelf's vibrations about 1,200 times.
That in Antarctica, winds blowing across the snow. Possibility that it could cause what we just heard, Dr. McPherson, your thoughts on that?
No, that has absolutely nothing to do with what I'm studying, and I'm really glad you raised this because it's been some stories like that have done a real disservice. In fact, have been a real setback to my project. And what some people tend not to do is to hear some of the finer details in some of that research. And by the way, there's been other research in geophysical research that has made very, very lazy, using very lazy terminology, making reference to, you know, mysterious Earth's hum and that kind of thing. Did you notice in the reporting on the sound and story that you just read that they had speeded up those vibrations by a factor of about 1,200? In other words, what they are reporting on, nobody can hear. What they are reporting on is not a sound. They're talking about some vibrations that are colossally below the range of human hearing. And I would say that, number one, that often gets lost in the reporting. But number two, it has nothing to do with what I'm studying. So the other research out of France that was widely reported about the mysterious waves, seismic waves rippling through the earth, is the exact same sort of thing. Very interesting research, by the way. Completely valid, interesting research. But it's got nothing to do with the hum. It's got nothing to do with an audible noise. And so to make some of that research more accessible to the everyday person, they gloss over some details and they use lazy terminology like the word hum. But humming has got absolutely nothing to do with the phenomena that those scientists are studying.
So as far as the other theories, we talked about something internally generated audiological phenomena as one possibility, or maybe even the leading theory on this. What are some of the competing theories on the hum?
Another one, which I think is serious, is that it could be that as a society and as human beings, that we have reached a certain critical mass of noise. And it could be that there are now a sufficient number of people in the population with very sensitive hearing systems, and it can be demonstrated that there are such people. And it could be that those people now are just detecting what I will call a grand accumulation of human activity and human noise. And we can make a laundry list of such things, everything from mining activity to air traffic, to high-speed road traffic, mining, the electric grid itself, transformers, electrical devices, marine traffic. It goes on and on. So there is that possibility. And I think that theory has some problems with it. But then again, I think all the major theories do have some big question marks with them. So that might explain, for example, why over in Western Europe, which was the site in England and in that part of the world where they had some of the first high-speed, high-volume freeways, even before the United States had the same kind of volume and density. Who knows? Maybe there's something operating there. I think it probably makes more sense that if in fact the hum did originate in England around that time, and I'm having a few people check into that, doing some historical research, looking for evidence of the hum in earlier times. But assuming that it did start in England at that time, my best guess is that there's something environmental that was introduced in a widespread way during that time, and then that went to the United States, followed by other parts of the world. For all we know, it could be a simple over-the-counter drug or over-the-counter medication that has this unusual autotoxic effect. We know that there are many prescription medications that are autotoxic, for example. Maybe there's an environmental issue. Maybe subsequent exposure to electromagnetic radiation or electrosensitivity, maybe something along those lines. We're not sure. But I do think, though, that that internal body generation as a medical audio phenomena is the most likely. The final theory, I'm not sure whether you asked about that one yet or not, but the final theory was one that perhaps there could be some kind of geological or tectonic process that gives low frequency sounds or the impression of it. I kind of regret including that one now. And the reason why is because that's been conflated with some of the research out of France, where the researchers used the word hum even though it had nothing to do with any audible sound. Nevertheless, that my writing on that point is still out there. And I put some sort of geological or tectonic seismic processes. Maybe one possibility. It doesn't answer very much, quite frankly, but it is out there as a theory.
Yeah, and it's important, to recognize that, Dr. McPherson is open to all of these possibilities because, it would be sexier if he came out and said, it was, I don't know, extraterrestrials. But the fact that he doesn't necessarily 100% for sure know what is causing this but is open to the possibilities is very admirable, in my opinion. We did have a question that came in through an instant message on our Facebook page, and so since we're talking about theories about what this could be, this listener wanted to know, could it be originating from underground?
Okay, there are some people out there, for example, who are convinced that there's these large tunnel boring machines burrowing away beneath us and that sort of thing. I think my best answer to that is that there are probably 20 or 30 everyday things that could be causing some sort of hum, which I'll write out using a lowercase h, hum. And sure, who knows? But that would explain one person's case in one particular narrow location. it does not even come close to explaining the worldwide generic phenomenon that I'm studying. So anything that a person writes in and suggests, well, within reasonable limits, I'd say, yeah, who knows? Could be. But there are a lot of these explanations that can be rejected out of hand. And if you don't mind me just quickly tagging on to what you said about me being open-minded, yes, but some people get disappointed because I ask very hard questions. I am a skeptic. I believe in the scientific method. I do not believe in magic. I believe that we should expose fraud. We should expose frauds, expose psychics, expose all people who are using pseudoscience and other type of charlatan type techniques. Having said that, though, everybody gets one chance with me. And my response is always the same. Let's see your evidence. Let's see what's behind your thinking. And let's suggest some experiments that could tell us more about what your theory is. And so, yeah, I'm very open to whatever people have to suggest, but I'm also take an extremely conservative approach scientifically. And I think that's the only reason why my project and my team is still around, is because we've managed to survive the onslaught of all the ridiculous commentary and the science fiction that's surrounding this. I mean, for goodness sake, this thing was even mentioned on the X-Files by Agent Mulder when he made reference to the so-called Taos hum. So that's quite a mountain to climb, you know, once you've had that sort of attachment to pseudoscience and science fiction.
Yeah, and I want to talk to you about the sky trumpets as well, but I just want to piggyback on what you just said, because I absolutely 100% agree. And that's the problem in today's society, is they'll latch on to one particular thought, opinion, belief, whatnot, theory, and they'll apply it, you know, to everything else instead of taking each and every one on a case by case basis. So I totally agree with that. The sky trumpets. Now, that's been something that has, I don't know, maybe you have a better pulse on this than I do. Are we hearing as many reports of the sky trumpets today as we were, you know, 10, 20 years ago?
Well, I have to tell you that this is something I never intended to become involved in, and I've assiduously steered away from this topic. But I can report to you and your listeners now, just as I have through other media, I've actually solved this one. I know exactly what it is, and I can reproduce it, and you can find it all over the world. And the reason why I can say that is because I accidentally caught it on video. It's quite remarkable, actually. I was in Russia last summer. I was in Moscow, and I was having a real problem with a little piece of paper regarding my immigration card, just to go there, travel as a tourist. And I was under a lot of stress, and I was making a private little video, a travel video. And I didn't realize until months later, reviewing it, I thought, oh my goodness. And I was listening to it, and I actually caught the sky trumpets on video, and I posted that online. And so then at the time, I was aware of what was causing it, but I was just so distracted by the paperwork issue that I didn't think to right away act on it. This is a mechanical noise, and I've actually heard it right where I live now more than once, just because right where I live, not to give too much away, but we have some large, very large delivery trucks that will come to the one of the businesses close by. And it's I would say that probably 40 to 50%, maybe even a lot more, of the sky trumpets are caused by mechanical noises, specifically the large trucks braking at very slow speed is what's causing that. And again, one can go listen to my video online, and once we look into it, you'll see that this, in fact, has been reported for decades, but people have just simply been too lazy to go find it. Talk to any heavy-duty mechanic or go look online, and they make reference to the dying whale noise or the groaning metallic noise, and it sounds exactly like what I caught on video, and it sounds exactly like what I've heard more than once living in my place here. And again, I wish I had something more exciting, but this is just complete nonsense, and I wanted to move on from it, but given the chance, I thought I would just mention again to your listeners that there is nothing behind this. I think we need to move on.
Yeah, but see, that doesn't sell books, Dr. McPherson.
No, it doesn't. And by the way, it's also the fact that I don't have any corporate involvement on my website. I get a grand total of about $200 per year in donations, which doesn't even cover web hosting or what have you. I have a bare bones website. And again, I think that dry, strictly scientific approach, again, without advertising, without sponsorship, without the flash and grab, I think is the reason why I'm still talking on the radio and to TV reporters and that sort of thing. And no, it doesn't sell books. It's not excitement. It's not magic. It's not, it's none of those things. Science is hard work, you see. And some people are simply too lazy to undertake the study of it. They would rather take an easier route, and they want to believe in magic and all other kinds of silly things. And I have never once stood up and claimed, for example, that psychic phenomena don't exist. What I've said is exactly what people like James Randi have said, is show me the evidence. Let's put it to the test. And once we do, we find that most of the more fabulous, fantabulous claims tend to dissipate. Same thing with sky trumpets. Same thing with, again, a lot of the stuff I encounter.
Dr. McPherson, thank you so much for coming on the program tonight. We appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
That is Dr. Glenn McPherson, thehum.info. We'll continue on our Sunday Into the Paranormal right after this.
We're streaming 24/7 on the Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live and at paranormalradio.com. Go down, the strange comes out into the paranormal.
I thought that was a very very nice way of putting it, a very conservative way of putting it, and I don't mean that as far as a political party, but certainly not everything is going to be explained. The stories that we hear on this program, you know, you always have to bring an open mind on that. And I thought that our first guest did a great job of doing that and keeping everything in perspective for us. Not everything that you hear on this program is going to be an immediate, like, home run for you, right? I mean, I get that. This stuff has to kind of gel over time. And I realize some of the stuff that I talk about in this program is out there. And it takes, you know, a couple of times of you hearing me out there before you start to really kind of see the patterns and the trends that I'm starting to see. And so I hope you'll keep an open mind as you always listen to this program, because whether you're a skeptic or whether you're a believer, it doesn't matter. Fact is, you know, you've got to think for yourself. And when it comes to psychics and mediums, it is no different. There are plenty of people who are skeptical in psychics and mediums. There are plenty, though, who will stand behind the services of a psychic or a medium, who continue to find, you know, some value in their life from these services. And surely there are some that just don't believe that we have the power to communicate with higher energies. There are certainly those people out there. However, a story tonight from a police lieutenant of 25 years might change your mind if you're on the fence of being skeptical about this. Her inner voice saved her life twice on the job and helped her catch a car thief as well. Her name is Leslie N. Bank, and she retired from the Baltimore Police Department, now works as a security consultant. She graduated from Johns Hopkins University with a Master of Science degree and has channeled spirits for about 10 years now, beginning with an extraordinary experience with the spirit realm while she was meditating. And if you ask Leslie, she'll tell you she firmly believes that if she can make this profound connection, that other willing people can do so as well. Isn't that true, Leslie?
Yes, sir, it is. I believe anybody can do it if I can do it. I'm about as grounded as a person as you can meet, especially having been in the police force. So it's an unusual mix, I guess. but anyone can channel. I do believe that we receive messages every day in the spirit world. And I would say it's kind of like if you're in your car and you're listening to terrestrial radio and you drive away from your area where you receive your favorite station, does that mean that they're not transmitting, or are you just out of range? That's the example that I use, because once you get in range, you can receive the messages if you return back to that range. So spirit is on a vibration or a frequency that most of us are not born into. The people that are born into that frequency, you know, they're on TV, they're the psychics that say they've always been that way. I worked with my frequency and just had a breakthrough one day when I was meditating. I happened to be on a raw food diet. I think that was part of it, which I'm not on it anymore. That's not sustainable for me, but I was on a raw food diet. And I was off of work, so I had no stress. The phone wasn't ringing. And I just sat in meditation. And I meditated for probably about 6 months or a year, just to really have a sense of peace. But then I had an experience one day where I was contacted by a spirit guide and who spoke to me, and it really just changed my life. And so things that I didn't think were possible, suddenly an entire world was open up to me. And I feel like if that can happen for me, if you can take the time to meditate and work with your frequency. In my book, I talk a lot about trying to manage your frequency. So if you have a very, people's energy is distributed differently. And I talk about energy in the book a lot. And the reason why energy is important is because we are energy in a physical body, but spirit is just energy. And to get to their frequency where they can communicate with us, some of us have to manipulate it a little bit. People's energy is distributed differently. People that have their energy distributed below the waist are grounded people. They're good at business. They are very family oriented. People have their energy distributed above the waist. Either it's centered in their heart area, where they're very emotional people, or their crown area. These are Reiki terms, where they are they're deep thinkers. So they're the people that toss and turn at night. They can't turn their mind off. So how your energy is distributed would dictate how you adjust your energy to get into range. So people that are above the waist need to come down a little bit because their mind's racing and they're not able to control their thoughts. People that have their energy distributed below the waist primarily, not entirely, but that's where the balance is. It's primarily below the waist. They need to come up. And so I needed to come up because that's how mine is distributed. And once I came up with the raw food and the meditation, things just fell into place. And now I don't need to meditate to receive messages. I receive them every day. As part of my, I could just ask a question and get an answer. So who doesn't want that?
Well, I guess if you can turn it off, and turn it back on, then it might be an ability that would be advantageous. But if you couldn't turn it off and you had no control of it, maybe you wouldn't want that ability. I don't know. That's just my thoughts. As far as the meditation, that kind of started you down this road. How did you know you were communicating with the spirit guide at that moment?
I could feel the energy that was different around me. It was a very loving energy. It just felt like I was enveloped in love. I could see in my mind what he looked like, and I could hear his words in complete sentences. And there was no doubt in my mind that he was communicating with me. It's not, for me, it wasn't like you see in the movies. It was with my third eye that I could see him, which is basically you're receiving it in your mind. I have seen with my two eyes since this happened. I've seen myths and shadow figures and full body apparitions. Things did progress to where I could see, but I'd prefer to hear. That's the manner that I like to get information. It's just a little less disruptive for your day to just get a sentence here and there rather than seeing something that no one else is seeing. For me, that's a little unsettling. I'd rather not.
So you do have a certain amount of control over that.
Yeah, there were times in the beginning where it was so constant. It was like, you know, a friend that you haven't talked to for 5 years and you're just trying to catch up. And it just felt like constant chatter. And there were times when I was like, look, I just need 24 hours of just no contact. And they would honor that. They always honored my requests. So I felt like I was in control. And when I told them that I was ready for contact, they would return. I've gone to hotels where, unfortunately or fortunately, when you're known to be a receiver, it's like you have a vacancy light on at the hotel. Wherever I go, if I travel, I'll be at the hotel. I'll usually get visited by a spirit. And there were many times I had to travel for work where I'd said, you know, I'm really tired and I just want to get a good night's sleep. And they would honor that. So you just let them know what you need. If they're with the light. If they're not with the light, then that they're not going to listen to you. But I haven't really had too many experiences like that.
Then you got to bring out the magic potions and all that sorts of stuff to deal with them.
Well, I've been fortunate, but I asked Archangel Michael to protect me. And of course, there are some you can sage, and there are some things you can do, holy water, etc. But I've been very fortunate to stay within the light.
Now, this experience was that when you were on the force or after you had left the force?
I was on the force. It was about a year before I retired. I had smashed my big toe, so I was out of work. After a surgery, and I couldn't even leave the house, couldn't drive, and I was just stuck at home with nothing to do, and just started meditating. I had been sporadically meditating, but I really sat down every day and did it, and about a year later, I felt like the job no longer fit me, and I had to move on. But, you know, once you open up, it's really hard to see the things that you have to see.
And do you feel that it no longer fit you because of what you had experienced? It started opening you up to, you know, maybe things that you weren't necessarily aware of or you hadn't given much thought to previously.
The reason why primarily is because I was becoming more and more empathic, where I could feel I was more sensitive to energies. Feeling a victim's energy. And also, you know, one of the messages I received early on was that we're all connected, that there is no separation. We're all connected. No matter, someone on death row is connected to me. We're all connected. So it was very hard to compartmentalize things the way I do, I used to, and the way all police officers do to get by. They just have to compartmentalize. They cut off from their feelings when they're at a scene. That's why you'll see them standing around and they'll be talking about football scores. They disconnect. But I had lost my ability to do that. So it was harder and harder to just stay there.
And you had some stuff happen. You had some stuff happen as well because of this ability to communicate with your spirit guides while you were on the job.
I did, and I never paid any attention to it. It's so funny looking back now. I've always gotten messages, and I just thought they were my imagination. I really just never paid any attention to it. One example I give is I was in a motorcycle accident, and I was thrown from the motorcycle, and I was about to come down head first, and I was going to have like a Christopher Reeve-type injury, I imagine, if not be killed. And at the last moment, something whispered in my ear, tuck your head. And I tucked my head, and my shoulder was the first thing to hit. And it hurt, but I survived it. And there was another incident where they said, you're in trouble. And I was in a situation where I was in big trouble. I made it out okay. The thing with the car thief, I just looked over at a car, and they said that car's stolen, and it was. It was stolen. So, I believe that all police officers are intuitive. I've said this on other shows. All police officers, they call it their gut instinct. The best cops I've ever worked with could look at something and assess it pretty quickly. What is that about? But men don't like to use the term intuitive. They like to use the term gut instinct. But really, this isn't a special ability. We all have this because it was designed to keep us safe. Men would leave the cave to go hunt. And they needed to use their gut instinct and intuition, however you want to call it, to be safe. And women, this is very obviously very maybe a sexist explanation, but women need to be intuitive. You look at your baby's face. What does your baby need? There was one time where my child had the croup. I didn't know what it was. He had this terrible cough, and I just. Something said, take him in the shower. You know, I ran him the shower for him and the steam calmed him down. I didn't even know what he had. I didn't know. I was like, that's a very odd thing to do, but I did it and it calmed him down. So I really feel that everyone has intuition. Everyone has funny feelings about things, gut instincts, but some people tend to override them because it's not logical.
But you actually say it does, that we should not ignore that we should always not ignore it.
Yeah, there's been times when even I will override it, and then I'll look back and think I knew that the whole time. I should never have overridden my first instinct about that, about a person, about a job or whatever. It's not going to lie to you. Your mind is kind of designed differently. Your mind is designed to keep you safe. Your ego is all caught up in your thought process, in your conscious mind, but your intuition is really just designed. There's no ulterior motive for that. It's just designed to keep you safe, and it's a truer voice, in my opinion.
Do you think you'll ever use your ability in a law enforcement role again?
I doubt it. I don't think so. No one's been calling asking me to do that. I know that some officers, some agencies do use psychics. I think they do it very discreetly. They probably wouldn't even admit that they do it. And of course, I'd be glad to assist if anyone needed my help. But no one's called. But I can tell you that I watch a news story and I will think, that's not true. That's not the way it happened. And I'll hear a follow-up a few days later, and that would be absolutely the way that would be true. My first instinct about it was true. I'll hear a story about a woman, make boyfriend, and yeah, that's who killed her. So yeah, and some of that's just statistics, really. But usually my first instincts are correct.
What about situations in public where you come across, people in your everyday life and you just get that bad feeling that they're up to no good? Has that ever happened?
Yeah. It saved me from being robbed. One time I wasn't armed, and I was going to college in the city, and these two guys were headed towards me, and their eyes were fixed on me, and I knew they were about to rob me. It was dark. I just had a strong feeling they were about to rob me. So at the last minute, I veered off and went to the bus stop where there was a bunch of people standing. And you know what? They completely changed the direction and went the other way. They were going to rob me. In that instance, I wasn't going to second guess myself. I do get hits about people. I try not to be too intrusive. I don't want to be constantly reading people all the time. It's considered a little bit intrusive in the industry to do that without someone's consent. But sometimes things just come in.
Yeah, and you have to be careful because not everybody is open to your help as well. But you know, you may see something as it involves somebody else, but not, you know, all the time. Always reach out and let them know you know about it, because you say it can be intrusive. Some people aren't open to that.
I've been talking to people. This has happened many times. I'll be talking to someone, and I was at a vigil for a police officer that was killed in Baltimore. I was talking to her father, and she was there, and she was talking to me, and I didn't even know her. And she was like, tell my dad this, tell my dad that. And her father, her poor father, was just trying to hold it together, and I couldn't do it. I said, I'm sorry, I can't. He wasn't asking for it, and he was really just trying to hold his emotions together and get through this evening. For his family. And oddly enough, when I got back to my car, I hit the button and the lights came on inside the car and unlocked the doors. And I saw someone in my car, and I was with a friend of mine who'd asked me to go to the vigil with her, 'cause she knew this officer that was killed. And we both looked at each other and said, who's in your car? So I thought, it was my imagination, but she saw someone in there too. And I ran up to my car and there was no one in there. And I said, that's confirmation that that's who I was talking to. She was in my car. And in fact, she continued to talk to me for about an hour after that encounter. And she just wanted to talk to somebody. And what I found interesting about that is that the case of her death hasn't gone to trial yet. And it's iffy if they'll be found guilty. It's not really a sure thing. And that had me upset when I first read how they were going to defend the case. And she said, hey, I went out on my feet doing what I wanted to do. I'm proud of the way I die. She said nothing about the man that killed her. There's no malice. She was at peace. And so that was interesting to me. There's a different perspective, I think, from the other side.
The title of your book, The Receptivity Project, Make the Connection, and we'll get into more of that subject material in the second half of our interview. But people do have to be receptive to this, you know, and you also have to realize that you're not going to make contact on the first time or the first try.
Right. It may take a while.
And we'll get into how long it actually took Leslie before she started being able to communicate with these spirits. Leslie N. Bank, my guest, author of The Receptivity Project. And we'll come back with her right after John Jeter and Paranormal News on this Sunday edition of Into the Paranormal. I'm Jeremy Scott.
Paranormal News with John Jeter at the bottom of the hour.
Holy cow.
Only on Ear 2, the Paranormal.
Got Skype? Connect with us by searching ITP51 and click in. Or call toll-free 855-790-8255.
Thank you, Gene. We're back with Leslie N. Bank of the Receptivity Project. 855-790-8255. Why am I saying that? Gene just said that. Move on, Jeremy. All right. Her website is linked up at paranormalradio.com. That'll take you to the Amazon page where you can get a copy of the book. We were talking right before the break, or at least hinting they're headed in that direction about, you know, being receptive to this, because you have to be receptive to it in order for it to happen. And it's not going to happen overnight, as Leslie said. In fact, tell us about how long it took for you before you started breaking through, dare we say it, to the other side.
So I always, as I said, received messages that I thought were my imagination. And then I was at a barbecue, and I just got an information about someone I didn't know there. And it turned out that information was true. I found out in a roundabout way that information was true, and I was kind of shocked. And then I thought, well, what about all this other information I've been getting all these years? Is all this true? Like, it's like, as a grounded person, it just was shocking to me. So then I went on a mission to try and develop that, to see if that was something that could be improved, if I could really learn more about this. I started working with a spiritual advisor, and we would sit across from each other in silence, and I would meditate, and nothing would happen. It took about a year by myself. As I said, when I was stuck home on the raw food diet, when I had my first breakthrough, it took about a year, and I was pretty determined. I don't know why. I just felt like I have to know more. If that was true, and I've been getting information all these years, and then I'd also had information that saved my life a few times on the job, I just wanted to explore it further. I really was curious. And once I made the connection, I really felt like, if I can do that, why can't everybody? And wouldn't the world be better if everyone could do that, or would do that? If everyone knew that we were all connected, wouldn't we be better to each other, kinder? So they told me early on that they wanted me to get this information out there, that just one more person, just with a different spin on it, maybe would resonate with a different audience. But really, if we all realize we're connected, it would be harder to hurt each other.
Yeah, if we're all the same, yeah, you may be a little kinder to your fellow brethren. I get where you're going with that. Now, as you started to, you know, reach out, it seems like, I mean, you were home, you were you were bored, you were looking for something to do. You just happened to break through to the other side. But in the folks that you've had dealings with, why, you know, and as they read your book and they want to know how to do this, why would someone want to channel, whether it's a loved one or a friend or, you know, a coworker or whatnot? Why would someone want to do that?
Well, if you just want to talk to grandma, you can just go to a psychic and pay. Because this changed my life. I had to change my job. My long-term relationship, it was over within a year of it. So it was life-altering for me. So if you just want to talk to your grandmother, then you should probably just go pay a psychic. But if you want to know about your spiritual journey, why are we here? You know, I view my view of our existence is that this is school. Carol Mace calls it Earth School. So we're here to learn. We're not here to get a big car. We're not here to get that corner office. We're here to learn. So I believe that before you incarnate, you design your life plan to meet your objectives, the objectives that you had before you got here. So wouldn't it be easier to have access, if we're just here to learn and we're here to meet spiritual objectives? It's almost like having a cheat sheet if you can have access to more information. We're not here to accrue wealth. It's wonderful if you're able to do that, but that's not why we're here, and you can't take it with you. We're here to learn from each other. So I feel like if you want to, if you want your life to have a greater meaning and more depth, if you feel like something's missing from your life, it's a good way to connect with your true self and to your guides. And we each all have a team of guides assigned to us.
Yeah, you can't take your wallet and your credit cards to the afterlife. There's just no way to use those.
maybe PayPal, but nothing else.
Bank of the afterlife.
Right.
How should one go about starting to make contact if they're interested in doing so?
They should say specifically that they want to speak to their spirit guides. They have to say that explicitly. You can't just think it. Just say, "I would like to make a connection." If they're going to try and meditate to receive, they have to say right up front, "I just want to receive messages from the highest possible source." Say a prayer of protection, whatever prayer works for you. But if you just open up the door, it's kind of like, you know, every horror movie starts out with that Ouija board. You can't just let anyone in. You have to be particular about who you're going to channel. So you have to explicitly say the highest level possible. And that's who will come through.
Should anyone have fear about doing this?
That's probably why most people don't do it. It will change your life. It doesn't have to change your life as drastically as it changed mine, but it will change things for you because you're going to look at things through a different lens. Number one, I've had far more positive experiences with this than negative. I have had a few negative experiences, but I feel pretty well protected by my guides. I have a team of guides that protect me, as we all do, and I call on them for protection when I feel that I'm in a dangerous situation, in a dangerous psychic or spiritual situation.
What do you do personally when you're getting ready to, to do this? Is there a certain routine that you do?
Well, sometimes I do house cleansings. The last one I did, I brought a friend who has ability. We formed a circle of holy water and stood within it, said a prayer. We both had medals of protection. I always carry a St. Michael medal with me, and we went in. Luckily, this particular house, it was just the previous owner. Wasn't anything demonic or scary. She just had something to say, and actually, once she said what she had to say, she left. She moved on. I take precautions. It's not something that you should play with without knowing how to take those precautions.
And it's not necessary. I mean, are there cases where it just doesn't end well? I mean, people strike out. Because for you, I mean, it took about a year before you really started to have success with this. But for others, maybe they don't want to know what they're going to learn by an experience such as this.
Okay. If you don't want to go all out, there are ways that spirit communicates with you, that people probably aren't even aware of. So, I'll give you an example. If an image flashes in your mind that seems so random, what is that image about? This example is in my book. I was in a meeting, and the meeting was chaired by my boss at the time, and she had a reputation for being sort of a bully in the office. And she was wearing a beautiful cross. It was diamond inlaid. It was just beautiful. And I was like, wow, her cross is beautiful. Then I stopped to wonder, you know, what does that mean to her? Because she doesn't really seem to embody the philosophies of Jesus in her day-to-day work in the office here. Is what I thought. And at the moment I had that thought, I saw an image of M&T Bank Stadium, which is where where I'm from, Baltimore, all the fans in the stands all wearing purple and black. And I understood exactly what that meant. And that meant, you know, just because you're wearing the jersey doesn't mean you're in the game. And that's 2 seconds, you know, an image says a thousand words is what they say. And in a second, I got what they meant by that. So images are, if something random pops in your head, if you're driving and your grandfather's face pops in your head and he's passed on, he's there with you. He's there with you. It's hard to really get a sense of the energy around you while you're driving, but if you're able to, you will probably feel him. They also speak in reoccurring messages. So if something keeps happening to you over and over, something strange, like the example I give in the book is I was unloading the dishwasher and I couldn't pull the tray out all the way. So one of the utensils had it stuck. So I had to move some things around. I found out what was stuck. I pulled that out, emptied the dishwasher. And then I went to find some tape, go into the desk drawer. That's jammed up. Something's stuck in there. So I move things around, open the desk drawer finally, get some tape out. Then I have to go pick up my son from school. I jump in the car. I had SiriusXM on, and the program happened to be on Dr. Laura. And she's telling the lady, the minute I get in the car, I turn the radio on, she's telling the lady that she's talking to, you're stuck. So it was three back-to-back you're stuck examples. And I don't find that to be a coincidence. So I had to think about where I was stuck in my life. And I knew where I was stuck. But that's not a coincidence. Anytime you have to stop and think, wow, that's a really weird coincidence, you should really look into that. It's I don't really believe in coincidences.
Yeah, and I think neither do I. I'm leaning that direction. There are also some things to do, you know, speaking of a higher level that we can do to manipulate our energy, because energy, you know, it is all energy. And to reach this optimum level to be able to carry on these communications, sometimes you need to do a little something to manipulate that energy.
Yes. I talk about energy in the book. It's important to understand energy if you're going to go down this path. I would recommend a Reiki 1 course. Reiki is a healing modality. Would you like me to explain more about that, or?
And by the way, you are a Reiki master. I think I meant to say that earlier.
That's okay. So Reiki is energy healing. It's a strange word because it's from Japan. It's Rei, which means from above, and Ki or Chi. Chinese say Chi. Ki is energy. So it's energy coming from above. You're really just a conduit for energy to come through you to heal someone. You're not the actual healer. You're just a conduit. And that's what I tell my students, because you can't get your ego all caught up in that. So I talk in the book about how your energy is distributed. You need to figure that out in order to manipulate it to an optimal level. So if I wake up in the morning, I check in to see how my energy feels. If I feel like it needs to come up, I'll wear like a citrusy cologne. If it's optimal, I might not wear any cologne. If I want it to come down, if I have a job interview or something that's stressing me out, maybe a presentation, I'll wear a more relaxing scent. So I use things that appeal to the five senses to manipulate my energy. So on my way to a job interview, I will listen to calming music. If I wanted to get excited about something, if I was feeling low energy, I would obviously rock out in the car. For your sense of smell, you can use oils and candles. Peppermint, eucalyptus, orange, citrus, they're stimulating. Calming is the vanilla, almond, coconut, lavender. Sense of sight, you can use your colors that you're wearing to either calm you down or bring you up. I talk about clutter in the book. Clutter in your home, in your car, in your office is a big vibration buster. It interrupts the flow of energy, and your sight, just looking at it, is energy reducing. Sense of touch would be different types of exercise, maybe a massage to calm down, yoga to calm down, Reiki to balance your energy. You can use aerobic exercise to bring your energy level up. Foods, the foods and sources that are nourished by the sun, such as plants and fruits, nuts, they'll bring your energy up, your vibration up. And foods that are nourished by the earth, such as animals and byproducts of animals, that will ground or bring your energy down. So some people that are maybe talk a mile a minute or have anxiety, sometimes, you know, a cheeseburger is a good remedy for that. For me, I needed to bring it up, and the raw diet, just coincidentally, it was just a combination of things that seemed to put me in range. So the book is divided in three parts. One is understanding energy. The second is manipulation of energy. And then if you want to take the final step, there's some meditation guides, some meditation guides in there for both grounded energy types and above the waist energy types, because there'll be a different type of meditation based on how your energy is distributed.
What do our spirit guides want us to know?
Well, one of the prevailing messages that I've gotten since this has started was that, just like the Beatles song, love is all there is. Love is all there is. There's either the love or the lack of love. So whatever you're doing, saying, feeling, it's in one of those two categories. So if you can stay in the love category, you're on the right track. They'd like you to know more about your life's purpose, because they are designed to help you complete your tasks here. But if you're not able to receive messages from them, there'll be cues along the way, like breadcrumbs for you that you can still follow. The coincidences in your life, the people that they cross paths with you. If you're able to, Rhonda Byrne says in one of her books, she wrote The Secret, she believes that any conversation that she is able to overhear, even if it's unrelated to her, she's at the grocery store, she hears two people talking, she assumes that there's something in that conversation that she's meant to hear. Like she doesn't believe in any zero coincidences. So that's one of the authors that in my book I recommend. I really enjoy her work. She talks a lot about gratitude and basically the law of attraction, which is a whole other show.
Well, I appreciate you coming on tonight. Certainly been wonderful to talk with you. Is there anything else you'd like to talk about with the audience tonight?
Just that this is happening, and you can either spend your life ignoring it, or you can be open to receiving the messages that you're getting. And you don't have to be clairaudient, clairvoyant. You can just get everyday messages, those little coincidences, those things that you question, that nagging feeling. Listen to your intuition, because your intuition is here for your survival, and it won't lie to you. Your brain cannot always be trusted. Your mind cannot be trusted.
Wow, that's a bold statement. I like it, though. Leslie, thank you for the book, and thank you for coming on the program.
It was my pleasure, sir. Thank you.
Absolutely. And let us know when your website gets back up. We'll put that link on the website. I understand your website is not in good shape right now.
Nope. Had it hacked, and that's probably not a coincidence either.
No, probably so. Not. All right. Good night.
All right, sir. Good night. Thank
that's,
you.
That's Leslie N. Bank. I think we all are intuitive. I think we all have those moments in our life where we go, nah, you know, I'm not buying it. I'm going with my gut feeling. I'm going that's a form of intuition, and we all have it in our lives. You know, if not every day, you know, every other day, where you just have this sense that something's going to happen. You know, those moments like, hey, I should call this person. You know, I haven't talked to them in XYZ time, and why there they show up on your phone, or you get a notification that it's your anniversary, you know, on social media, and you're like, I was just thinking about that person the other day. And then, of course, there's the context in which it doesn't have anything to do with intuitive ability. It's just getting spied on by all of those social media companies because we give them permission to, and then they start feeding us ads based on what it is we were just looking up on the internet. That's no coincidence either, friends, because as Leslie says, and as I believe, there are no coincidences. Everything is meant to happen for a reason. That is the reason that karma does exist, friends. Next week on the program, a very special note will be on Friday night live at 9 p.m. Pacific time. That's midnight Eastern time. We're going to be relocating the studio on Saturday. So for those of you who can't be with us on Friday, it'll be as if you were here live on Saturday all the same, because we'll replay that program for you. If you can be with us on Friday night, we'd love to see you in our chat room and taking part in the conversation. So we're going to be talking about experiences with manifestations of the mysterious and unknown. And we're also going to go squatching through the Blue Mountains of Oregon. I'll be broadcasting as well from the Oregon Ghost Conference coming up the 30th and 31st of March in Seaside. We'll be putting on two nights of broadcasts for you down there. And they've got some really, really, really amazing people giving presentations and classes and lectures down there in Seaside, Oregon. So I'm going to be bringing you it as much as possible. So join me on Friday next week for the program, and then we'll be back to Saturday the following week from our brand new studio. If you missed the program last night, we talked with Stan Gordon about all sorts of weird, anomalous, strange things happening primarily around the state of Pennsylvania where he investigates. And we also talked about censoring of content and creation of fake news. For those of you who heard that program, don't worry, I'm not going to go into great detail about everything I just talked about last night on the program, but for those who didn't hear it, go check it out. And if you're not a member, you can get information at paranormalradio.com on how to become a member. Because you have this content infiltrating media, and you have, you know, social media censoring certain types of media, and you know, it is my opinion that we're just living in a day and age where everything is spoon fed to us, and far not enough people will fact check. They will not get a second opinion. They will not look up alternative sources. They will just run with it. So that was the gist of the program last week, or last night. And if you missed that, you can relive it by going to paranormalradio.com. And I'm hearing from some of you who have alternative theories on what we discussed in the first half of the program tonight, and that would be the weird hum that's been happening all around the world. And for those who missed it, oh, it sounds something like this. And that's about all I'll play. I know it is, it's at such a frequency where it doesn't sit well on the ear, and I get it. And I love that you're thinking. I love that I got you to think. That is my ultimate goal of doing the program, is to open your mind and make you think. And I love it when you email me, which you can go to paranormalradio.com and just click that contact section, type your message in there, fire it away to me. It's really good to hear your feedback, that you appreciate the subjects that we talked about on the program, and that you're thinking for yourself and that you have your own theories. And some of those are actually really, really good ones. Really, really good ones. I'm sure Glenn has probably heard the gamut of them. Some of them are new to me, but you're certainly making me think. For that, I thank you for opening my mind further into this subject. So I know it's made you think and wonder, well, what actually could be behind this? From the cold, dark depths of a secret dungeon somewhere deep in the remote Pacific Northwest, I thank you so much for dedicating two of your weekend evenings, that would be both of them, to this program. And I'll talk to you later. I'm Jeremy Scott. Night-night, friends.